Hello, welcome to this week's Boxer News podcast, The Opening Bell. I'm editor Tris Dixon, joined by Matt Christie. Matt, it's been a busy week. How are things?
Yeah, they're good. They're good. It has been an eventful week here at BN Towers, hasn't it? But that one's been put to bed, and now it's on to the next issue.
Stress levels high this week?
They were on press day. Yeah, they were on press day while the rest of the office was out enjoying themselves with a NewsQuest
summer party.
We were hard at it, but you know, this is the path we chose, and on we go.
You still want to work here?
I do very much so. Still want to work here.
Okay, good. Glad we cleared that up. So yeah, there has been a lot of interesting stuff. God, you can cut the tension with a knife in here now. So there's been some interesting stuff this week. Not least the main event in our action section, where Sal Canelo Alvarez outscored Erislendi Lara. Matt, any surprises whatsoever with the type of fight it was or the outcome?
Not really. No, I mean, I was, as I'd said many times before, I was surprised that Canelo took the fight. I admired him for doing that. It was exactly the kind of fight that I thought it would be. At the end, feasibly, it could have gone either way. And I don't know, perhaps Canelo felt that he had to fight somebody as slippery and as elusive, or in the same mould as Floyd Mayweather, to kind of put some demons to bed. And I'm not sure he did that completely. I'm not convinced he's going to go on and go down in history as one of the best. But kudos for him for going through the fight and coming out the winner.
What will he have learned from the Lara fight?
Not to fight anybody like that again.
Okay, interesting. I think, what do you give him props for taking a fight against a guy that no one really wants to fight?
Yeah, I mean, it was, Canelo's big business, isn't he? Even on whoever he's fighting. So, you know, his purse wouldn't have been chump change, whoever was in the opposite corner. However, I'm sure there would have been far more lucrative opponents for him, or maybe not even lucrative, but he could have gone along and fought somebody else who would have been a far less taxing evening, and he probably would have been paid the same. I think this really was a statement of intent in terms of he really, really wanted to prove himself against the division's best.
He was paid, I think, $1.5 million, and I think Lara was paid $1 million.
All right, isn't it?
Not bad, is it? I mean, you know, it's not the same as we make on a press day Tuesday. When stress levels are so high. But I don't know, Matt. I've never really been sold on Canelo. I would like to be sold on him. I'd love him to be the next big thing, the next big star. And in fact, maybe he is the next big thing and the next big star. But whether he's becomes the iconic fighter people think he sort of seemed destined to be is another matter entirely. That said, there are good fights out with him, and you know, Cotto's nearer the end of his career than he is the start. And they both weighed 155 pounds for their last fight. Who would you pick in a fight, Canelo or Cotto?
Yeah, I'd probably go for Canelo.
Would you?
I'd probably go for Canelo. It would be a tentative pick, I think, and perhaps I'm being harsh on Miguel Cotto. I'm a big fan of everything he's achieved. I think Sergio Martinez result and performance flattered him somewhat, and I think I'd pick Canelo to defeat Cotto. But I think it was interesting the names that Oscar De La Hoya mentioned after the fight. I think, what was it, Cotto, James Kirkland, and Gennady Golovkin was kind of thrown in there. But I think we're seeing with that there will be absolutely no rematch, and he won't be going in with any kind of cute and elusive fighters again certainly in the short term future.
Would you want to see a rematch of Alvarez Lara?
Do you know what, I quite enjoyed the fight. I've seen Pete. It certainly wasn't fight of the year, but I think as for purists, it was good to see both of them go about their respective styles. Lara for me deserves a rematch. I think it was that close a fight. John and I last week were talking about the fact that this one could end in a draw. Now, how often we kind of look at draws, this one kind of had drawing all over it. And to me, that probably would have been a fair result. And in which case, when there's a draw, there should always be a return. But I completely understand why Golden Boy will want no part of the rematch. It would be a difficult sell, I think, as well, wouldn't it?
From the feedback I've seen, and this is on social media, Boxing News' social media channels, so Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus. And from the reports I've read, and from Bobby Hunter's fight scores as well, it seems to be the majority, not a vast majority, but the majority think Alvarez won. But the stronger feelings, the more emotional feelings, are from people who think Lara won but didn't get the decision.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I found it all a little bit frustrating. It was predictable that Lara would immediately come out with robbery. It wasn't that kind of fight, nor, and it wasn't that kind of decision. All the scorecards, bar the 117, 111, you could make a case for 115, 113 either way. It wasn't a robbery. It was too close. It was far too close to be a robbery.
Okay, interesting stuff. I mean, it's good for... I'm not sure if it's good for business or what, but it's good. We've got a picture of Oscar De La Hoya and Alvarez. Good to see a fighter, De La Hoya, an ex-fighter, wielding so much clout again as a promoter. He's now obviously got the reins of Golden Boy back underneath him. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does. Obviously, they've announced that the Brooke-Sean Porter fight is going to happen on August the 16th. Some tough fights for some Golden Boy fighters out there, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a really interesting one that no doubt we'll talk about more in depth in the future. But yeah, really, really interesting times for Golden Boy. And I did, like going back to the Alvarez-Lara, I did wonder why Oscar had made that fight, particularly with Golden, what with Richard Schaefer leaving and everything else. I thought, well...
But it'd been made before Schaefer left.
But I was still expecting it. I was expecting this fight up until a few days before to be cancelled because I just thought it was a nightmare fight for Alvarez.
Okay, interesting. On the undercard, Abner Mares beat Jonathan Oquendo. Francisco Vargas beat one of my personal favourites from the time since I've been editor, really, Juan Manuel Lopez, who's always given 100% in the ring. Not quite sure he's applied himself quite that way outside the ring. Juan Manuel Lopez, just a couple of weeks after the great rival he never fought, Uriarkis Gamboa, lost. That's a fight that's really been lost in the sands of time, isn't it? And that was arguably the best fight that could have been made 3 or 4 years ago. Sad to see Lopez lose, but he's starting to get some miles on the clock now, isn't he?
Yeah, certainly the end of his career has come far sooner than anybody would have predicted a few years ago. In his most recent fight against Vargas, he looked quite delicate early on, and you know that has always been something there with him. In that he would, you know, I think he rose from the floor a couple of times. He had a few three-round wars with people when he was, what we can look back now and say, was his peak. You know, that was always part of the appeal with him. But now you do kind of get the feel that perhaps retirement is the only option for him, because the way he fights, he's always going to get into trouble and get hurt.
Never quite the same after that grueling fight with Rogers Mataagua a brutal fight. Yeah. Tough, I think, Tanzanian based in Philadelphia. Mataagua, I don't think he was the same after that fight either.
No.
He went and got blasted out by Gamboa, I think, at a later date. Elsewhere, but on the same night in Liverpool, old friends, should we say, Tony Bellew and Nathan Cleverley, came face to face, even if they weren't in the ring with each other just yet. Cleverley Bellew, excited about a rematch at Cruiserweight?
Not majorly excited.
Wow, you sort of stole the thunder of my rather grand introduction.
I'm looking forward to it, but you know, when you compare, I think if it'll be the third major British rematch this year, presuming it takes place this year, and I think out of the three, it would come in third place. My favourites, Froch Groves, would be up there. Looking forward to Fury Chisora 2. More so than I am Cleverley Bellew too.
What did you make of the shenanigans on Saturday night with Bellew and Cleverley after Bellew had won? Cleverley had already banked his victory.
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of all this. I think the dislike is real. I believe that. But I mean, more and more of these things, when you see guys come together like this and there's so much disrespect between them, it almost has an air of pantomime about it.
WWE stuff.
Yeah, and I'm just not a fan, but perhaps that is now what's required to sell fights. I don't think there's really any place for it, certainly not at this stage. You can understand it when they're coming together at a weigh-in and they're mighty, they've been training for 12 weeks for that guy that's in front of them now, and you can understand why temper's afraid at that point, but now it's too much.
Do you think measures should have been taken to keep them apart, or do you think that was all part of the show?
I suspect it was all part of the show, wasn't it? It will certainly, yeah, there's that old saying, isn't there, any you know, any even bad publicity is good publicity, or whatever it is, or any publicity is good publicity, and I think ultimately it'll prove to be, so I think that it probably was, I think that their positioning and everything else was, although it may not have been sorted out beforehand, I doubt it would have been discouraged.
Who do you fancy in that rematch?
It's, you know what, that's what makes it intriguing, is that there's not an obvious answer to that. Bellew arguably has fought the superior opposition at cruiserweight. Cleverly is still showing some of the flaws that he had before, which were his undoing at light heavyweight. But Cleverly, he looks good at the weight. You look at him now and you're almost surprised that he was at light heavyweight. In terms of his stature and the way he looks, but it answers the question. Bellew, maybe I would go for
stoppage
this time. No.
Bellew and points. Okay, yeah. Interesting. What would have to be on a card with that to make it pay per view?
They can't surely make it pay-per-view, can they?
Well, what else would have to be on the card? That's what I'm getting at. What standard fights would you want on a bill if that bill was going to be pay-per-view?
You'd want, I would say, for example, if Brooke was to win and they could organise a quick home defence, I think you'd need, I mean, they'll no doubt be able to attach some kind of belt to this, but you'll need a legitimate world title on the bill for it to be pay-per-view, without question. I'm just trying to think of some of the other guys there that could...
There's obviously talk that David Haye will be coming back later this year, so you could arguably have Haye in a comeback fight, obviously as long as it's not packaged as the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but even so, I think David Haye, I think as you said yourself in an old Heroes and Villains, that David Haye would do well to stay well away from pay-per-view for a little while.
Yeah, quite right. Good sentiment. Anthony Joshua defeated Matt Skelton, a 47-year-old who I went to Germany to cover. I've covered his WBA title shot at Ruslan Chagaev many, many moons ago. And I was ringside for his boring fight with Michael Sprott, the first one, and I was ringside when he was in an absolute belting fight with Martin Rogan, which was a real sort of classic tear em up, which was, you know, a fantastic heavyweight fight. Smashed to the deck and wiped out by Anthony Joshua in two rounds. Explain what Joshua got from that fight.
I think it was a decent fight for Joshua at this point in his career. Skelton did give it a go. I thought he would give it a go. Landed a few punches, nothing that seemed to trouble Joshua too much. Joshua predominantly would have got some confidence from that. And he has showed it that he now can go on to the next level. I think that was a stepping stone to the next level. But in terms of, you know, real experience in terms of rounds, there was never going to be that much there with Skelton at this stage of his career.
Okay, interesting. You can read the rest of the report for John Dennan's view on the main events, featuring Bellew, Cleverly and Joshua. And there's also obviously the reports that have Callum Smith, Luke Campbell, Anthony Ogogo, Stephen Smith, Rocky Fielding, Gamal Yafai, and the rest of the big bill. So it's all in there. And then elsewhere this week, Gary Buckland fell short against Richard Comey at Bethnal Green. Daniel Herbert was there. We've got all of the rest of the British action. We've got news from, we've got a report from where Arjunas Mendez lost his crown to Rancis Barthelemy on a Mike Tyson show in Miami. And then I've weighed up this weekend's big fight, which is Guillermo Rigondo against Sod Kokietjim in Macau, my old favourite place, Macau. I had this great fight in Macau. I've covered a fight in Macau, man, a few months ago now. And I covered Pacquiao Rios over there. It's really becoming big business now with Zhu Shiming as the sort of, I don't know, I don't want to call him the Audley Harrison, but you know what I mean? If I call him the Audley Harrison, completely. Like the star attraction.
Completely.
It's part novelty, partly because he can fight, but he's in lesser fights, but somehow the main event on the bill out there. Rigondo, Kokietjim, looking forward to that at all, Matt? I mean, the reason I asked so skeptically is there's a serious knock on Rigondo. There's people who love him and can watch him all day, as I think Scott Quigg says in the Expert View, and there's people who he just simply bores to death. What camp are you in?
I wouldn't want to watch him all day. I'll gladly watch him for 12 rounds though. But then probably the week after I'd want to watch somebody else. But yeah, I think for 12 rounds, just sit back and just appreciate the art, because that's what it is, it's an art. He's unlikely ever to be in a fight of the year contender, and that's because probably he might struggle to meet anybody that give him a real fight down there. Excellent boxer.
A bit like Andre Ward, isn't he? Too good for his own good, despite having some decent fighters in his weight class.
Yeah, completely. And it's a shame, really, that Rigondo, you know, at 33, may not be allowed to fulfil his potential for those reasons. I think many, many moons ago, if he'd have been around, say, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, he would have gone down in history as one of the absolute greats.
Style-wise, who do you think gives him the most problems? Leo Santa Cruz, Carl Frampton or Scott Quigg?
Possibly... You could really make a case for him winning all of those fights, winning all 12 rounds of those fights, can't you?
maybe fitting two in the same day.
Maybe Frampton. Frampton might be able to...
Because he's so physical and strong. Yeah. Possible. Okay. Zhu Shiming, I will say, I mean, there is this sort of almost freak show element attached to him, because he's so big and he's got the largest audience of any boxer out there in the world at the moment, with sort of 300 million people watching his fights on TV in China. The guy can fight. The problem is he hasn't got great power. He's still got a lot of his amateur habits in. He's in his early 30s now, so it's quite possibly too late to make serious wholesale arrangement changes, even with Freddie Roach in his corner. That said, I remember in Macau last year, Freddie was saying that in sparring, Zhu Shiming has his way with Brian Valoria quite often. And so, you know, the guy can fight. He's obviously a very, very decorated amateur. It's about how quickly he can make the transition to become a world-class pro. And if he can make that transition, he's scheduled to go 10 rounds for the first time in his career this weekend. And I'd argue that it would be in his best interest to get 10 rounds under his belt, to try different things in there, to try sitting down in his punches more, to try a few more of the professional things that he needs to learn and carry out, to be more successful than he has been thus far as a pro, because two or three of his performances left so far have left a lot to be desired. That said, where I talk about the big audience, 300 million plus, that's an awful lot of pressure on one fighter. And although some fighters revel in pressure, that's for some fighters, that's an awful lot to handle.
I agree with you, and I think that the fact that he has kind of been thrown into the event, these kind of at this stage of his career, every fight shouldn't be a massive event like this, unless he's going down that route of winning a world title fight in his first fight or his second fight. That doesn't seem to be the case with Shimmy. And as a result, okay, what, when did he make his debut? I mean, I remember it was a Saturday afternoon, so I remember covering it for the website at home. It was over a year ago now, wasn't it? It was well over a year ago. And I don't really think, I'd like to see him a lot more active, maybe come over, fight somewhere else in the world. He could have been at 8, 9, 10 or up, 10 and 0 now. And I think really, like you say, get these 10 rounds under your belt. If your team and you believe that you're ready for the big fights, then take them.
Okay, interesting stuff. I'll be watching that show in Macau quite carefully. I, for one, am a big Rigondo fan. But like you, I would struggle to watch him all day. That's just the way it is. Part of the reason that you have that struggle is because there's no one near his level. If you had two Rigondos in there together, as much as the styles wouldn't mesh, you'd have the intrigue throughout, yeah, because everything would be close, which you don't normally have in Rigondo fights. Elsewhere in the issue, we've got a 60 seconds interview with Emmanuel Blandamura, who's coming over to fight Billy Joe Saunders. And in fact, Billy Joe shares some of his training secrets in fighting fit this week. There are interviews in the amateur section with Nicola Adams and with Paddy Barnes. Danny Flexen's spoken to Leo Santa Cruz extensively for a large feature. So there's lots going on. Matt, you were at a press conference on Monday. In fact, sorry, just before we go on that. And also I spoke to John Conte for a Q&A. And John Conte, the Liverpool man, really I wanted to speak to him about the Liverpool boom that's going on there at the moment, but also about the late Matthew Saad Mohamed, who's his great rival from 1979, who he fought twice in Atlantic City. But Matt, sorry, you were at a press conference earlier this week, and you mentioned earlier that the Bellew Cleverley thing left a bit of a sour taste. What taste did the press conference that saw Tyson Fury and Derek Chisora going head to head, what taste did that leave you with?
Not an overly pleasant one, to be honest with you. It's funny because I'm kind of currently putting together the preview of this fight, so I looked back at their first fight, and Fury did something similar in the lead up to that. There was, and I remember being on the conference call, rather than doing it in a cinema, he did it on a conference call, where he threatened, I think, to kill Chisora. Chisora then, this is going back 3 years now, obviously, Chisora then put the phone down, and Fury was warned for his actions. And Fury currently is being investigated by the board for his actions that happened in the cinema on Monday. And it wasn't shocking, because anybody that knows Tyson Fury knows that he can kind of lose control in these moments of excitement. But it was the nasty attack he aimed at journalists that were in the audience there, who objected to his foul language. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you, I wasn't offended, but I think that's more to do with my character or anything else, but I did not. But at the same time, there's no way that I would encourage or find any part of that pleasurable when he was effing and blinding and this, that, and the other. There's times where Tyson Fury is funny, it's amusing, but I think the problem is in press conferences, in public environments sometimes, Tyson Fury may hear a little snigger in his ear and become encouraged by that, and then it all slowly, slowly snowballs in his mind, and before we know it, the guy's on the brink of getting arrested.
Okay, interesting stuff. Who had the upper hand from that press conference? Who would have left more looking forward to the fight?
I think they're probably both looking forward to the fight. From the outside looking in, the person that came out of it with the most credit was unquestionably Derek Chisora. However, I believe that Tyson Fury is adamant that he's going to win. Derek Chisora is adamant that he's going to win. Sometimes you can get little clues from these things that are fairly close to the fight. You can get clues from body language and everything else. I didn't see anything in either of them that made me doubt what they were saying was true in terms of their promises of victory. I believe they both believe they're going to keep those promises.
Okay, interesting stuff. Now, you know what? I'm not one to gloat about getting things right, the same way I don't really like to talk too much about travelling and stuff with the job. But I seem to remember with in a podcast not too long ago, I was quite convinced that Floyd Mayweather was going to fight Marcus Maidana again for two reasons. One is that it was too late to build someone like Sean Porter and Keith Thurman as a pay-per-view star in sort of 2 or 3 months that you have in a run-up to a fight like this. And two, all the Marcus Maidana stuff was on tap. You know, there was already lines that TV networks could take and reuse, talking about rematches straight afterwards. There was the glove controversy, there was the tight scorecards, there was the type of fight it was. There was a lot of material that was all ready to pre-package for those guys. So all they've done is turned it around, and they're going to do it again. So it's like, instead of one fight, you've got two mini-series. Mm. The vast majority of people that I've seen think that Mayweather will win the rematch more comfortably than he did the first time. We've got a headline here, Method Behind the Mayhem. Jack Hirsch, our senior US correspondent, was covering the press conference that announced the fight in Times Square for us. Method Behind the Mayhem, being the name of the show. What's the method behind this fight? I mean, what does anyone get out of it, and how can it possibly make money or even do better than the last ones, than the last Mayweather-Maidana fight, which we've heard hasn't done brilliantly at the box office by Mayweather standards?
I'd be surprised if it did better. I mean, but what do we get out of it? We get to see Floyd Mayweather again, and, you know, love him or hate him, it's hard to deny that he's the best boxer, pound for pound, of his generation. It's hard to deny that he will go down in history as an all-time great, even if he gets chinned by Maidana in the first round. This surely is better than Mayweather disappearing for 12 months and then coming back in May. At least we get to see him again. And the other thing that you've got to think about is that Maidana did give him a tougher time than we thought. There were times in there where Mayweather looked a little bit uncomfortable. I'm more or less certain that they were not, as Mayweather often attests to, is the fact that, yeah, I'm making these fights interesting now because I want to. No, the fact is likely to be because he's a little bit slower than he used to be. I would be astonished if the Floyd Mayweather of 5 years ago would have had that level of problems with Maidana. So as a consequence of that, logic would tell you that Mayweather will be a little bit slower still come September. So perhaps Maidana's chances of victory are slightly better. I admit I'm kind of
reaching.
Yeah, I am a little bit, because although logic might tell you that, it should also be screaming at you that Mayweather could well walk away from this 120-108 now knowing exactly what Maidana can do. Because can Maidana do any better than he did in that first fight? You would have to say at this stage it's doubtful.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Why do you think people would object to buying this fight?
Because they bought it before, I think would be.
No, but they bought it before and it was good. It was a good fight.
Well, yeah, but they've seen it, haven't they? There wasn't.
That's the answer, I think. They've seen it.
They've seen it, and it wasn't. I understand. When he fought Jose Luis Castillo the first time, that was one of those fights that split opinion down the middle. People saying a lot of people saying Castillo deserved that. That's the kind of fight that merits a rematch. This fight, as entertaining as it was, and I think that was more the fact that it was more insane than we thought it would be. It doesn't really merit a rematch, particularly not an immediate one.
If you were Maidana's team, what would you say Maidana did to earn the rematch ahead of the other contenders out there?
He's proven he will go in there and he will give it a go. I think Robert Guerrero, Saul Alvarez even, may have been watching that fight and watching Maidana's effort and just thinking, I wish I'd given it a bit more of a go like that. Because there really was a sense that Maidana was letting it all hang out there.
Okay, interesting stuff. The magazine has had a bit of a redesign this week, so I hope you guys pick it up and have a look through. It's taken a lot of work and effort from the team to put it all together. There's still more to be done, but it would be interesting to get your feedback on the new redesigned Boxing News. Really like to hear from you all about what you like and what you don't like and what you'd still like to see. Matt, what's going on online?
Well, there's quite a lot going on online. Obviously, we've got a lot of stuff with Mayweather. We're keeping up to date with that. Of course, we haven't mentioned Manny Pacquiao. It looks like he's fighting Chris Algieri. Well, it has all been signed now, I've just seen.
And there's a big feature with Algieri, who's gone out to have a bite to eat with Jack Hirsch as well, coming in next week's magazine, which is very timely. But yeah, what else is online?
On this days, it's although this point in time, historically, it's fairly quiet. But you know, we do try and look at all sorts of eras. The other day, we went back just 2 years to the David Haye, Derek Chisora fight. Yesterday, we went all the way back to Rocky Graziano and Tony Zale rematch. And you know, we've been known to go back all the way to the 19th century before as well. So always check out the website, because every day there will be an On This Day.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Matt, well, thank you very much for joining us this week. And we'll look forward to being back with you next week.
Definitely.